Hello everyone. Is that the end of day four? Is this the end of day four? Four full days, it is, isn't it? Wow. And you're still coming back for more. Be here right now. The entire universe happening in this single moment. If there is such a thing as a single moment. Isn't it amazing how things happen by themselves so much of the time? Like our breathing. Like the fact that we just can't seem to stop knowing experience. We're always knowing one thing or another, aren't we? It seems. Sounds, colours, smells, thoughts. Body sensations. All the time there's something being known. What's being known now? So we're sitting here together. Have you noticed that you're always in some kind of mood? Someone told me that once, or I read it once somewhere, I can't remember where it's from. We're always in some kind of mood, aren't we? There's always a mood, whether it's high or low or neutral, happy, sad. Coming and sitting like this, in an environment like this, you can't avoid the fact that you are a world of feelings. It's always happening. So we may as well face the fact that we have to connect with ourselves. Because we can't avoid it. Metta somehow is to do with connecting with our hearts, isn't it? And what I'm going to talk about tonight is something which is kind of similar, I think. Another way that we connect with our hearts. And it's another quality which probably kind of gets mingled up with metta. Maybe it's not even an exact quality. But it's similar to metta in a certain way. Probably certain ways. So with metta, it's something that we offer and receive, isn't it? It's both. We're kind of offering kindness, we're making a gesture from here. May you be well, for example. Seeing if light shines from our heart into another's heart or something. And we're also receiving metta. Also, may I be well. Sometimes teachers describe receiving metta as like a soft rain or something. You sit out in the mist and the rain and you get wet. You get saturated. The quality that I'm going to talk about tonight is devotion. And I've been a little unsure how to talk about this, and even unsure what it actually is. But I felt like I wanted to see what happens if I start talking about it. How Has anybody felt in the last few days a sense of kind of yes? Might be a no then. Like, you realise there's something really significant here. It's like, yes. Some part, something in you wakes up and it's like, yes. A kind of confidence. This is significant. This is worthwhile. This is worth my effort. This is worth facing difficulty for. This makes sense on some level. So let me read you something. This is from a German Theravada monk who's died now, called Nyanaponika Thera, who wrote a book called The Heart of Buddhist Meditation. Devotion, being a facet, a natural accompaniment of confidence, is a necessary factor in the balance of faculties required for final deliverance. That's kind of technical, isn't it? I'll read it again. Devotion, being a facet and natural accompaniment of confidence, is a necessary factor in the balance of faculties required for deliverance. Confidence, which is a translation of the Pali word saddha, sometimes translated as faith. Confidence in all its aspects, including the devotional, is needed to resolve any stagnation and other shortcomings resulting from a one-sided development of the intellectual faculties. So what he's saying there is if we get overly intellectual, then we need something else to bring us back into balance. And he's suggesting that devotion is a part of that. Such intellectual development often tends to turn around in circles endlessly without being able to effect a breakthrough. Here, devotion, confidence and faith, all aspects of the Pali term saddha, may be able to give quick and effective help. That's interesting, isn't it? I find that interesting. Okay, to change tack. So here we are on a retreat, and it's like an expedition. And we're hunting. We're going into the dark forests and the barren desert landscapes of our souls to try and find the natural resources of metta and awareness and presence and understanding. But why do we need to do this, to find these resources? Why are we so estranged from these resources? Why aren't they just right there where we need them? When we need them, we've got what we need. Why do we need to come to an environment like this? And why is it so hard to find them? Why is it so hard to find what we can trust? That sounds quite abstract. I'm going to move out of the sun. Well, listening to Caroline's talk, was it last night? I think it might have been. About young people, you know, when we're little, and we don't get what we need somehow. Has anybody felt like a child at all in these last few days? Like an upset child, or a lost child, or an insecure child, or... Thank you. Or somehow helpless, like a child. Well, maybe when we're little, there's some things we didn't get that we needed. And maybe we're still trying to get them somehow. And for me, this somehow is to do with devotional practice. Imagine if you are feeling like a lost child and you're on your own and you're in your cot and you're crying and you're upset and you're scared and you don't know what's going on. You cry out, don't you? You cry out for help. You say, where in the universe is there help? And you cry and you let out a cry, you make an expression. You're like, where is it going to come from? Well, imagine if you're here this week and you're sitting or you're just at some point in the day and you feel completely lost and unsupported. What would happen if you cried out for support from somewhere, from a magical being somehow? Is there anyone that you would want to turn up who could help you? Buddha, or Christ, or Tara? Sometimes when I've been really stuck in something, I have called out for Tara to see what happens. And use the Tara mantra. Om Tare, what is it exactly? Om Tare Tu Tare Ture Soha. Om Tare Tu Tare Ture Soha. Help. I need help. And sometimes I feel like there's a response. It's like, oh, Tara's here. Tara being the personification of loving kindness. So that may mean nothing to you, but it may be interesting as well. This is from the Metta Sutta, which I read a couple of days ago. Even as a mother protects with her life her child, her only child, so with a boundless heart should one cherish all beings. Isn't there something really devoted about a mother holding a crying baby, just holding a baby? Maybe we can call upon support from the universe in ways we hadn't tried before. Maybe we can imagine there are magical beings who come and support us. Maybe it doesn't even need to be a personification or a being. So, I'm sort of wondering where I'm going with this a little bit. But isn't devotional feelings like this, aren't they like metta? Because we have to be open to receive support. And yet there is also the aspect of offering ourselves. Like when we walk through that door and come and sit down in here, we're kind of offering ourselves up, aren't we? Like, okay, I'm going to come back again. I have trust in this tradition, maybe, or in this process. So we're giving ourselves and we're receiving somehow. It's a two-way thing. I remember when I was on one particular retreat, and it was a retreat where you really slow down, you go really, really slowly, and you deconstruct your whole experience, noticing feeling tone and craving and aversion and pleasure and pain and all the body sensations, and everything gets slowed down, and you get this display of your patterns emerging in front of you, like pleasure, I want that, pain, I don't want that. That person, all those feelings. This person, all those feelings. You just start to see all the different kind of things happening. And on this retreat, I was bowing when I went into the hall. There was a Buddha Rupa, a Buddha statue there. And I was like, okay, let's see what happens when I bow. And I noticed that I felt kind of excruciatingly embarrassed. I felt really silly and stupid. Like, why am I bowing? really slowly, really, because it was a really slow retreat, so literally 30 seconds to bow, and then coming back up again. And quite a few people around were doing the same thing. But I really wanted to try it out. I wanted to bow. I wanted to bow, and yet, I feel stupid. I really wanted to express myself in a certain way. I thought, I want to feel what it's like to bow to something that I respect, or to see what it is to respect something, to give my heart to it, and to do it, you know, and to risk being seen doing it. And I learned something really interesting, which I keep remembering since then. This was some years ago now. Is when I start to feel the judge coming in, you know, the voice of like, you look really stupid doing that, bowing. What are you bowing for? That's just religious. Why are you doing that? Voices like this would come into me. And then I would be like a dog, a ferocious dog, really vigilant, like, okay, judge, I'm watching you. I'm watching you, I'm watching you, I'm going to bow and I'm watching you. And I was like, hyper-vigilant. And what happened was, the energy, I just got a lot of energy from it. Because I wanted to express something. Normally I wasn't allowed to express it because I was so scared of feeling silly. But with this vigilance, which was like a crouched dog ready to bark at the judge if it was going to attack me, I would bow. And the judge would dissipate, and then I'd get all this energy coming up. And it's like, that's really interesting. So with a real attentiveness, I was able to catch the inner critical voices in a way which freed me up to express myself, to express devotion. And that gave me a lot of energy, and that fed into my attentiveness. So it was a kind of a virtuous circle of vigilance, mindfulness, devotion, kind of feeding itself. Is there anything you would really like to do, but it feels that it'd be too silly? Something that you really want to express, but you know it might just be really embarrassing. But it's something important. Well, if there is, isn't that a real prison to be stuck in? What is it to be really committed to this? What is it when you go home and you tell people, I went on a meditation retreat? They're like, you did what? Meditation retreat. Anybody feel silly about that sometimes? The devotion is like a commitment, isn't it? It's quite a commitment to come here. And what stops us making that commitment? What stops us expressing our confidence that this is a worthwhile thing to do? Well, for me, one thing is feeling silly, feeling embarrassed. But if we start to pay attention to that, it can allow a lot of energy to flow. If we start to pay attention to the contraction that comes in when we want to express ourselves. Maybe I could talk about two types of devotion. One which is kind of magical and image-based, where we see an image of a sacred figure and that somehow inspires us, or a sacred symbol, or a mantra. Or we see a monk, or we see a yogi, or we see a priest, or we see, I don't know, somebody that really inspires us. And there's also the devotion which comes from understanding something. We understand something's really important here, and we want to commit ourselves. We want to see what that's about. We want to put forth energy and show up and see what's there. Like, oh yeah, that little bit of teaching really made sense. I feel confident that that's worth pursuing. I remember when I was staying in Kathmandu for some time. Kathmandu is a really busy, smelly, noisy city. And there's not many peaceful places, but I used to go into the tanka shops. You know what tankas are? They're Tibetan paintings of their bodhisattvas and their buddhas, Tibetan deities like Tara. And I could just go and spend an hour in the shop looking at all these images, these really, really precisely painted images which take sometimes years to be painted. And pictures of, you know, mudras, positions and gestures of these magical meditation people with all their colours and all their symbols. And it would just have a really calming effect on me. I'd be in there and I'd look at this image and it's like, oh, kind of transporting and calming and uplifting. I find that really interesting. So again, from Nyaya Ponikatera. Images and not abstract conceptions are the language of the subconscious. So if we're talking about using devotional imagery, like a picture of the Buddha, there's a picture of Da Vinci's Last Supper up in the dining room, a picture of Christ there with the disciples. It's an image and it has some power. Images and not abstract conceptions are the language of the subconscious. In such a way, the subconscious, normally so often the hidden enemy in gaining self-mastery, may become a powerful ally of such an endeavour. So maybe there's a way that symbolism goes in deep, deeper than abstract conceptual language. Maybe if we let it in deep, an image of Christ, of Buddha, of someone who you really respect, an archetype somehow. Maybe that is a key into finding our resources somehow. Just thinking of the Indian saint Amma. Does anyone know Ammaji? An Indian woman who has an ashram in Kerala in southwest India and travels the world hugging people. That's one of the things she does. A friend told me that she has apparently hugged 23 million people. Isn't that amazing? Amma means mother. And she's like a mother figure for people. She's like an object of devotion for people. She's a focal point for people. And I haven't been to see her actually, but I've seen a few clips of her hugging people. And one thing that really struck me was when she's hugging people, they queue up. Some of you probably have hugged her. People queue up for hours and hours and have a very quick hug and then they move on. For some people it's an amazing experience. And I've just seen a few clips of it. And the thing that really struck me was She looks like she's really hugging that person personally, as though she's there for them, as though she really is their actual mother. There's something really interesting about that. It's like making metta personal. Maybe inviting Tara to come and sit next to you is a way to open to those deep places where, when we were little, our mum was really there for me, particularly me, not just impersonal loving, but actually for me. Maybe there are ways to connect with a really personal sense of metta, which is there just for you, and in your very particular set of needs. No matter what kind of regrets and worries and things are down there that we carry. Sometimes it's like we have to surrender when we're in here, isn't it? It's just, we don't know what to do. It's too difficult and we can't leave the hall yet and we don't know what to do. We have to surrender. It's a kind of offering of ourselves. And somehow surrendering is like loosening our grip. When we feel that there's a trusting thing around, we relax, don't we? When mum comes back to us when we've been crying in the cot, we can relax. When we feel like there is a loving presence around, we can relax. And when we can relax, when we loosen our grasp, that's an interesting moment. It's an interesting thing to notice what it's like to relax out of clinging. And if we're talking about awakening and wisdom, the 16th Karmapa in the Tibetan traditions would say, in the moment of love, the empty essence dawns nakedly. When we feel there's enough love, we relax and we can release. When we relax and when we open, maybe there's something very close which we can discover. Just a natural, non-grasping, open awareness. That it can be really important to find a sense of trust, a sense of confidence, a sense of being held. Maybe for some of us that is a devotional thing. So, as I feel like I'm slightly rambling, I wonder if anybody would like to say anything or add anything or make any comment or ask a question or hear their voice in the space. Has anybody got any experience of what you might call devotion, heartfelt commitment, objectless with an object? fine if no one has. I remember when I was in Kathmandu doing prostrations. You know, you see Tibetans bowing like this, straight down onto the floor. You do it saying a certain prayer, a refuge prayer, and you visualize, in this particular tradition, you visualize the refuge tree of all the magic meditation people in that lineage. There's like, I don't know, 50 or something. And I didn't know any of them. So I was just, you know, putting some teachers up there and just having a sense of what it was that I really valued and wanted to know what I was bowing to. And it was a really, really interesting practice. I didn't exactly know what I was doing, and I didn't have a lama who knew me, who I could go and talk to and find out what it was about. I did a little bit, but not enough. But it gave me a lot of energy. I was focusing with my imagining, with my speech, and with my body. Body, speech and mind, all in their unified effort of focus and commitment to something. There was no analysis in it. It wasn't an analytical practice. It didn't really make sense. And for me, that was really difficult. This doesn't make sense. Why am I doing this? This is for Tibetan peasants in the Middle Ages. Why am I doing this? It was quite an interesting challenge to trust something in me that wanted to commit to something, to see what it was about. Even in the face of doubt and things not making sense. There's a slightly cheeky, devotional, mystic Sufi saint from Persia in the 14th century, Hafiz. Anyone heard of Hafiz? He wrote a book. Well, one of the modern anthologies is called The Gift, for example. I've got a poem here from him. And it doesn't really make sense, I don't think. So don't try and make sense of it. You can try and make sense of it, but I would recommend just letting it land on you. See how it makes you feel. If your poor analytical mind gets confused again, let it just be confused. It's a poem called All the Hemispheres. Leave the familiar for a while. Let your senses and bodies stretch out like a welcomed season onto the meadow and shores and hills. Open up to the roof. Make a new watermark on your excitement and love. Like a blooming night flower, bestow your vital fragrance of happiness and giving upon our intimate assembly. Change rooms in your mind for a day. All the hemispheres in existence lie beside an equator in your heart. Greet yourself in your thousand other forms as you mount the hidden tide and travel back home. All the hemispheres in heaven are sitting around a fire chatting, while stitching themselves together into the great circle inside of you. I love the way when I read that, my brain just goes, what? And yet somehow deep inside here there's just like, yes, I like that, I like that. It feels good. It's energizing. It gives me some energy, something wells up in me from somewhere. And I sort of know what it means somehow. I can't explain it necessarily. Maybe it does mean something logically. I'm sure it does. So I've kind of covered all the content that I was going to talk about tonight. And I think probably it's been a talk which hasn't made a lot of sense. Which maybe on this occasion is okay. Because maybe life doesn't always make a lot of sense. And yet we still know there's something significant here that we want to know. Or that some part of us feels a response to. Some part of us wants to come on retreat, even though we know it'll be difficult and we don't necessarily know what we should do all the time. So this talk is about honouring that part of us that wants to come here, even though it doesn't always make sense. And feels the value of it somehow. Maybe when you're doing your metaphrases, if you're doing metaphrases, and it just doesn't make sense, it just doesn't work. It's like, this doesn't work. Maybe the little voice which says this doesn't work, or maybe it's a big voice. Maybe it doesn't matter. Maybe you can still find something which will sustain you to keep showing up. Keep an open mind to see what you might learn. Being prepared for it to go in a way that you didn't expect, like tonight's Dharma talk. Who knows what's going to happen this evening? Who knows what mind states will come and visit us in the next minute, 2 hours, tonight? Has anyone else got anything to add? Okay. Thank you for your presence again. And see you later.